Welcome to the Penny and Pops podcast. He's Spencer Penny Strode. I'm Adam Pops Papa Giorgio. It's here. Cavs vs. Magic. Playoff series preview. We are looking for our first series win since 2010. The Cavs are looking to get to the second round for the first time since 2018. Let's go.
Hardaway straight down the lane. The power jam. Point guard on the 7-6 guy.
Here's Lewis turning and he shoots. Yes!
Here's Turkaloo for the win. That's a winner for the Magic. Tino Turkaloo. Hardaway racing for clock and he hits. Magic leading by two with 7 points for the second remaining.
They lob it up high.
Goodness.
We're recording this Thursday evening, April 18th. There is no NBA action today. Friday, though, is the last two play-in games. So we got a doubleheader Friday where we know the entire playoff field. But we, the Magic, opened the 2024 NBA playoffs. So that's very exciting. That's happening Saturday, April 1st, Saturday, 1 p.m. Oh, man. Saturday at 1 p.m. So if you've been hiding under a rock, you know, you don't know when it is. It's Saturday at 1 p.m. So plan accordingly. But this is the second time that the Magic and the Cavs are facing each other in the playoffs. The other was back in 2009 when the Magic won the Eastern Conference Finals. We did it in six games. And yeah, that was a fun year, right, Penny?
One of the best.
So. But, yeah, I mean, right now the Magic, they won't fly out to Cleveland until, like, after their Friday morning practice. So they'll get into Cleveland, and basically they'll have less than 24 hours before the series starts Saturday afternoon. I personally would be like, go fly a day earlier over there, but I'm not a part of the staff, so, but... The Magic are healthy going into Saturday, though. Everyone's available. The Cavs still don't know for certain. It looks like they're going to be out without Dean Wade, but basically everyone else is available. But, I mean, Wade's a pretty big loss because that hurts their forward/big man depth a little bit there. But I know Sam Merrill, he had like a neck thing, but he seems to be ready for them. So I'm not missing anybody, am I, Penny?
I think that's about right.
All right. So before we get into questions about the series and just kind of the reviews and all that, we're going to look at the 2-2 regular season matchup that we had with them, because I want to kind of see how much, if any, of these four games you can take into this playoff series that we're about to have right now. So you got to go back to the first meeting, December 6th, which we lost at Cleveland, 111-121. The Magic and Cavs each had three full days off. So no rest advantage for either team really there. Magic didn't have Wendell, Isaac, or Markel. The Cavs were without Caris LeVert, so Cleveland was pretty healthy. I mean, Cleveland jumped out of the gate 37-20, and it was really tough to come back from that rough of a first quarter. This was Paolo's 42-point game in Cleveland. This is by far his best game statistically against the Cavs. Cole had 19. Goga and Anthony Black started. Franz, he shot 3 of 16 from the field. That really stung. The Magic as a whole were 2 for 23 on threes, and the Cavs shot 14 of 34 from deep. So there was a 12-3 point make discrepancy there. So you can't win when the other team makes a dozen more threes than you. But and then Mitchell had 35 points and Garland had 26. Any thoughts on this game, Penny?
I think it's probably you highlighted things that could carry over. Obviously, as we talk about the regular season matchups, there's, rest factors involved and how the teams were operating at that current point in the season and also who was available. But, the guard play and the 3-point shooting and field goal percentage type stuff, I think that's the kind of key takeaway as we look to see what we can pull from that first meeting and bringing it forward.
Yeah, look, the big one is we didn't have Wendell, Isaac, or even Fultz, whereas Cleveland was just missing LeVert. Like, I don't care about that game. So then 5 days later, December 11th in Orlando, the Magic won 104-94. The Magic and Cavs each had two full days off, so there wasn't a rest advantage there, really. The Cavs were without Evan Mobley and LeVert. Magic were without Wendell and Fultz, so we had Isaac playing this game. The Cavs led 29-22 in the first period. The Magic, though, were only down three at halftime, and then Orlando won the third period 30-15, which was the difference in the game, really. The Magic only shot 7-26 on threes, but Cleveland shot 9-40 from deep. So that's a lot of missed threes there from Cleveland. Darius Garland did have 36 points in the game. Mitchell had an inefficient 22. Tristan Thompson did have a double-double off the bench. Sure. So yeah, we got to keep an eye on that potentially being an issue. But the Cavs, you know, they stuck around in the game because they attempted eight more free throws than we did. But Paolo for this game, he had 20, 10, and 4 assists. He did have the 8 turnovers, but that's part of the learning process when you don't really have a real point guard out there for a lot of that. Bronz had 19, but again, like the first game, the second game, he was 0 of 5 on threes. Goga was a very efficient 15 points, and he had 4 big blocks in this game. Ingles led our bench with 12 points. Look, the Cavs didn't have Mobley, so that's a bigger loss than us not having Wendell, really. But I'd say this one's a much more truer game than the first one. Obviously, it helps that the Magic won, but any additional thoughts on this, Penny?
I think it's a much more accurate representation, except for Tristan Thompson getting any minutes. I'm not foreseeing that in the postseason.
I wouldn't rule it out, man, because they don't have a lot of big man depth. Like, if Jared Allen or Evan Mobley, even forget them getting hurt, if they just need like a big breather or something, they get foul trouble, like, we're going to see Tristan Thompson. Like, there's no way we don't see him. But and then you got to go to January 22nd in Orlando for the third meeting. The Cavs won this game 126-99. Look, the Magic were on the second night of a back-to-back after an emotional and awesome win over Miami the night before. The Cavs, they had a full day of rest after smashing the Hawks in Atlanta. So the Cavs had a rest advantage here. The Magic didn't have Jonathan Isaac, no Gary Harris, no Markel. Cavs, they sat out. They didn't have Darius Garland or Evan Mobley, but my counter would be, this is the best version of Cleveland that we've seen this season, was when it was literally Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen running the show. And they kicked our ass this night. You can't really get around it. The Cavs led 38-19 after one quarter. We never recovered. Like, these slow first quarter starts were not doing us any favors in these Cavs meetings. This was the Sam Merrill game where he had 26 points on 8 of 13 threes. Mitchell, much more efficient game, 25 points, 13 assists. I mean, Mitchell's racking up double-digit assists. I don't like the odds of us winning these meetings. You know, you want to see that Mitchell assist counter to be closer to 7 or below, really. But the Cavs, 20 of 38 on threes. Magic, 11 of 29 on threes. That was the difference. The Cavs made 9 more threes than us. Wendell did start this game. Goga, I don't think even Goga played this game, even though he was available. Paolo, Franz, and Mo were our only decent offensive players in this game, but we needed more help. I chalked this off to schedule loss at the end of the day. Like, this of the four, even if it was our ugliest showing, it's, I think, the biggest outlier game, because we were at a rest disadvantage. There's no Isaac or Gary. Both those guys, you can argue, are going to be starting for us. Yes, they didn't have Mobley or Garland, but that's why, just in general, this is the biggest outlier game. I don't know, Penny, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, it was so many key pieces being out in this one, it's hard to carry anything over. And I think the result of that contest had more to do with the three-point shooting than anything else. You know, that's essentially what's 9 times 3 is 27. That's the exact difference in the game. So,
yep, your math is better than mine. But yeah, you're right. It really was the difference. So, and then the fourth and final meeting, February 22nd. The Magic won this game 116-109 in Cleveland. So we've won in Cleveland. They've won in Orlando. We've won in Orlando. They've won in Cleveland. It's really like an actual even 2-2, really. This was the first game after the trade deadline for both teams. This was when a lot of the All-Stars got mysterious illnesses. So Paolo was sick but played in this game. Markel was out for this. So we had everybody else but Markel. And, sick Paolo was playing. Donovan Mitchell was also sick. He sat out, though. And the Cavs were missing Tristan Thompson. But the big loss there is obviously Mitchell. The Magic finally start a first quarter well. We led after the first quarter 29-24. The rest of the game was fairly even, honestly. Like, the Magic, though, did hit more threes. We were 14-25 from three, which was outrageously efficient from our perspective. The Cavs, 10-22. So, I mean, still a good percentage. They just didn't shoot enough, really. Garland, Allen, Strus each had 18 points. Okoro had 17. Mobley had 14. They didn't have much help from the bench on their end. Whereas for us, we had Mo Wagner leading everyone in scoring with 22 points off the bench. Franz led our starters in scoring with 14. Cole had 13. Wendell, Ingles, and Paolo each had 12. Again, Paolo was sick as fuck at this point. So, and then Joe Ingles was perfect from the field for his 12 points. But yeah, Paolo was 4-15. He was sick. I throw that out the window. Cavs did shoot 8 more free throw attempts than us to stick around in this game. But, out of these 4 games, none of the 4 are really the same or super, super comparable to from a roster or an on-court performance perspective, really. Like, it's each game had certain players missing. There's various circumstances with each of these games. But if we held Cleveland to 10 or fewer made threes, we won. If the Cavs hit more than 10 threes, we lost. And I will say, since the All-Star break, the Cavs have been on a bigger decline than we have. Like, the Cavs net rating since the All-Star break is 27th. The Magic have the 6th best net rating. So, yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts on that 4th game or anything else about that before we get into talking series questions here?
Yeah, I mean, I remember just thinking at the time that it was a lucky break that Mitchell was sitting out for that one because, that was a key point in the season to get a big road win, especially with Paolo being ill, too. Kind of jumpstart, what would end up being a pretty decent second half for the Magic after the All-Star break. But again, agreed that it's weird, this particular season series. Again, just the circumstantial stuff makes it so hard to draw anything more than kind of, how teams are set up to play without their stars or, on significant rest disadvantages. So probably a little more noise than signal in those 4 games.
All right, let's get into the playoff series here. So I have a bunch of questions listed. I mean, we'll go through them as we talk about it. I mean, the big one I have is, how healthy is Donovan Mitchell, for one? And then I have 2 parts to that as well. Like, how invested in his Cavs employment is Donovan Mitchell? Like, is he already thinking about being traded in the offseason? Like, those are very valid questions. He's 27 years old. He's 6'3", but he's got that 6'9" wingspan. That's why even guys like Jalen Suggs have trouble slowing him down when he's getting it going. You know, he's making $35 million next season. And then the year after that, it's a $37 million player option that he's likely going to decline, probably. That's why the Cavs likely are going to look to trade him in the summer if they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals. So there's a lot of pressure here. But if Mitchell isn't operating on all cylinders, like, they're in trouble in this series against us. Mitchell, he's played 11 games since the All-Star break, including 4 in March and 4 in April. In those 11 games, 19.5 points per game, 5 assists, 4 rebounds on 40% shooting from the field, which isn't good, but that he's elevated his 3-point shooting to 40% from 3. That knee injury that he's got, like, that's kept him from getting to the paint like he normally does, and I think it's taken away just his 2-point kind of efficiency. And he's leaning on that 3-point shot a lot because he was putting up 28 points per game the first half of the season. The other thing is he going to get the whistle that he got in the past before the officiating got much more stricter? And I mean, some folks are comparing us to the Knicks from a physicality perspective because, you can see just kind of how we're we can be big and we can really, I mean, we're looking to muck stuff up defensively. But you know, if you look at the Knicks last year with when the Cavs lost that series in five, Mitchell only attempted, I think, 3.5 free throws per game, which is low for him. And he averaged 23.2 points per game, 7 assists, 5 boards on 43% field goal shooting, but only 29% from 3-point range. And, you know, can the Magic's defense cause similar problems for him? You know, I think we can, between Suggs, Gary, a mentally engaged and focused Fultz, and then Anthony Black kind of as the in case of emergency kind of thing there. Or hell, maybe that's Trevlin Queen too. I don't know if he's going to be even available, but yeah, I mean, we've got the bodies to throw at Mitchell, but yeah, the other thing is, can we take advantage of kind of Joe Ingles's Utah knowledge of Mitchell? Like if anyone knows anything about Donovan Mitchell, it's going to be Joe Ingles, who was with him for like half a decade, basically. So, yeah, what's your Donovan Mitchell viewpoint, Benny?
Yeah, well, a follow-up question on kind of the question that you posed, which is, I think he's obviously playing. He's healthy enough to play. He's going to be talented enough as a singular offensive threat to make contested shots that are backbreakers. Like, I'm fully anticipating that. The question is, how invested is he in the team success, and what does he need to do individually to set himself up for the summer, whatever that looks like, for, you know, whatever he wants to accomplish, if it's getting moved or whatever else. But there was an interesting take. I think it might have been a ESPN podcast or something. Do you feel like Donovan Mitchell is impacted in any way by the way the Cavs chose to finish their season, where the thought is they go, you know, essentially, we don't think a Donovan Mitchell-led team is good enough to beat the Sixers in a playoff series? Like, does that creep in this series, or does that just does that even creep in terms of, you know, what he wants to do this summer if it's getting shipped out of town?
I mean, it's got to play some type of percentage, whether that's good or bad for us. Like, he could be looking at that and get himself extra motivated to kick our ass, or it could make him a little bit more likely to maybe check out if things get tough and adversity kind of sets in for that team. But I think it plays a role. Do you?
I mean, I think there's something to it, even if it's subconsciously. Like, you also kind of have to feel like, based on the flame out and the play, not flame out, but, you know, they lost in the first round last year, and this season was up and down. There were some injuries involved, but maybe the Cavs front office has taken a second look at how this particular team is assembled, and, you know, going to start pulling some levers and make some choices on their end too, not just you know, placating an individual's choice who may want to go to New York or someplace else.
Yeah, look, from a legacy perspective, like, Mitchell is staring at a third straight first round exit, right? Because 2 years ago with Utah, I think they got knocked out opening round two. Now, that team had a bunch of injuries, Joe Ingles being a huge injury at that point too. Him being gone completely cratered that team. I mean, look, if they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals, like, they're trading Mitchell. Like, I put that thing at like 90% that Mitchell's getting traded, because you have to get something in return or he's going to walk for free. And you're going to have to do that in the summer while there's still value there, because they gave up a lot of draft picks to Utah to get him, and it has not panned out overall. Like, last year was pretty good, and then the Knicks just fucked them up in the playoffs. Like, they had 51 wins last year, and I think they were the fourth seed again, you know, but they had four more wins last year than they did this year. And you can see there's just kind of this backward slide coming in now with them, where, you know, one, the Cavs, they're looking to win their first round series in over five, six years, you know. So it's, there's pressure there to get to the second round. Now, if I'm Mitchell, I'm like, I want to win a ring. I don't give a shit about a playoff series. But you're right. Going back to your question to me about, you know, did that last game where they tanked it to avoid playing a Philly or a Miami and instead they'd rather face us in a 4-5 matchup rather than have the 2 seed. Like, that's coward shit. And I think that does seep in, especially, like I said, if we punch Cleveland in the mouth in one of these first two games or both of these first two games, that team can fold real easy and that could get real ugly. And, you know, JB Bickerstaff, he's on the chopping block one way or another, but that team needs a lot more than just a coaching change. I don't know if you got anything else before we go to the next question, or if you wanted to implement your own question.
I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting. I don't think JB Bickerstaff survives much longer than, you know, 2 weeks from now.
I mean, they have to make the Eastern Conference Finals for him to survive. And that's just the reality of the situation. So, all right, my next question, does Jonathan Isaac start? And before I start going all this down, I'm literally just asking you, Penny, do you think J.I. starts game one at center?
This is unequivocally 100% yes.
I think you're right. I was listening to Philip Rossman Reich's pod, one of the daily pods, and he kind of made it seem like Wendell was starting. And I'm just like, there's no fucking way Wendell's starting game one. Like, you can't do that. Like, if you're genuinely trying to win this series, Wendell cannot start. Like, it's been proven this season that Wendell just does not have the body to be a starting center. And because you have Paolo and Franz, there's no room to start Wendell at another forward position. So then you're down to him playing, you know, backup center, backup power forward, which is fine. That's really, really good to have coming off your bench. But if you have a healthy Jonathan Isaac and you've been ramping him up, this is what you got to play him for right here. Like, Isaac, in 21 games since the All-Star break, he's averaged 17 minutes per game. He scored 8 points per game, 57% shooting from the field, 50% on threes. Now, it's not a high volume. It's 24 of 48 threes, 24 makes on 48 three-point attempts. So it's a little over, 2.5 attempts per game, plus the 5 rebounds. And then he's getting over a block a game since the break. And it's just straight up a matchup thing as well. Like, Jonathan Isaac is a better matchup against Jared Allen than Wendell is. Like, Paolo, I think he'll be able to play Evan Mobley fine defensively. You might have to switch him and Franz off, double duty going up against Mobley. But Isaac's height and just rim protection and elevation abilities can neutralize what Jared Allen does, because Jared Allen is a much better athlete than Wendell. And then Isaac, I forget which person posted this. I think it was one of the ESPN guys. I could be wrong, but Jonathan Isaac played 32 minutes in those 4 Cavs games, and we were plus 25 with him on the floor. And the Cavs shot under 40% from the field during that time. Like, this guy's starting. He's been ramping up. Like, he averaged 26 minutes per game these last 2 games of the season against the Sixers and Milwaukee. And you're going to have to play him 25 to 30 minutes and see if he can handle it one way or another. Like, this is what you load managed J.I. for. And before you commit more money to him in the future, you have to see if he can stay on the floor when it matters most. And right now, it matters most. There's no more load management bullshit. And then the other thing is just Wendell isn't rebounding well enough this season for him to be starting. And because we lost the rebounding battle against the Cavs in our meetings, like, even with, like, Goga, who's a pretty good rebounder, like, he could only do so much in the games he started. But with Wendell out there, we're going to not do well on the boards. I don't know. What are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, the plus minus stat is really telling. And I think the team has to be, again, one game sample size, but the team has to be super energized by the performance they had against the Bucks to close out the year. And I mean, I think we've kind of seen it all year when J.I. is on the floor there. Everyone else gets the defensive intensity ratchets up a little bit more because, you know, you have that length and timing behind you to cover up any mistakes. And obviously that leads to, you know, transition offense and makes things a lot easier on both ends. So there's no reason, you know, they've clearly been ramping him up over the last couple months, and specifically at the close of the season. There's no reason to believe or think that they're not intending to play him 32 minutes. You're getting 8 minutes a quarter, pretty much. I think that's what you're penciling in for J.I. And obviously, you know, there's foul trouble and everything else. But the matchup also dictates it with Mobley and Allen on the floor. So you're finding minutes for J.I. no matter what. And I think they've managed him to the point where, especially with a couple of days where there's 2 days in between games, that I don't think it should be an issue.
I'll be surprised if it's 32 minutes. I think it's going to be 25 to 30. But yeah, I mean, if we're getting 30 and above, like that's, yeah, I mean, it's on. So, I mean, you made a good point about just there's that mental buoy, life preserver, whatever you want to call it, with J.I. being back there kind of roaming around and doing help defense and protecting the rim. It's on some type of prime Dwight Howard spectrum there, where he's somewhere on that scale where it's Wendell just doesn't come anywhere near close to that. So yeah, I mean, you're right. All right. My next question is just simply, can Franz Wagner hit threes? Can Franz hit threes? Because he shot 28.1% from deep on 4.6 attempts this season, which is just a big slide from the 36% he shot his first two seasons. Like, it's just a big difference. And he was especially bad against Cleveland this season. He was 3 of 19 on threes, which is 16% in the four meetings. And if Franz can knock down the occasional triple, everything else becomes a lot easier for him for what he's going to want to do. And that just changes the spacing all in general. Like, that's going to help Paolo out. But, you know, if you got both Paolo and Franz hitting jumpers, there's going to be a lot of open looks for the rest of the supporting guys on the floor. But I don't want to hear any BS about him being tired. Like, I don't think it's a fatigue thing. Like, if anything, it's maybe it could be injury related with like a hand, arm, shoulder. But I think it's just the coaching staff tweaked around with his shooting form. Like, they try to give him more arc, and he's been falling short on a lot of these threes. And yeah, I'm, again, long term, next couple years, whatever, I'm not concerned about Franz's 3-point shooting. It's possible he gets it back in this playoff, because I'll tell you what, the past few games here to close the season, like, he's been showing signs that three is going to start dropping again. But yeah, I don't know, any Franz 3-point thoughts, Penny?
Yeah, I mean, the question is unanswerable in advance, but I think as we alluded to a couple episodes ago, he's kind of, it appears as though he's gotten past the mental block, which is the most important thing. I mean, if he's open, he's got to shoot it. If he's semi-contested, more than likely, he's got to shoot it. It's the best shot that we're going to create on a given possession. So I think that's the biggest thing, and the best thing is that he's a willing 3-point shooter again, and that's important for the Magic's offense.
I'm not going to throw stats out with this one, but can the Magic score in the paint? Because Cleveland's defense isn't as elite as it was last season, but they had the number one defense last season. It's six this year, so it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. Now, it's worse than our defense, but Cleveland's got the ability to turn it on again. However, the Cavs, they haven't really played much defense the last 6 weeks of the season. So do they have the switch to turn it on is the big thing there. You know, can Paolo and Franz kind of weave and bully their way to the rim against Allen and Mobley? Can we consistently have guys cut into the hole? Because if we're doing that, like, we don't need to hit a lot of threes to win games if we're doing all that stuff. Obviously, Cleveland is going to pack the paint, and we just have to hit an occasional open three, which we are capable of doing it. Like, we really are. But, you know, with Gary, Jalen, Joe, Cole, Isaac, and Wendell, like, they can bury open threes. And yeah, I mean, the other thing is just Mo Wagner. He played Cleveland very well this season. I think he averaged like 14 points per game against the Cavs this season. Can he get to the rim now in this postseason? Because he had some pretty decent success, surprisingly, against Mobley and Allen. And he's going to be just a big bench secret weapon there if he can get out there and somehow average like 15 a game. Thoughts on this, Penny?
Yeah, I'm going to answer your question with a question, because yep, that's ultimately what the success of the series will come down to is, can the Magic score in the paint? How long will it take Paolo and Franz to adjust to the playoff physicality and the way the games are officiated in the playoffs? And, you know, again, we touched on the, I think it was the Orlando Magic pod squad episode with Franz, where they're talking about how much he's working kind of outside of what he naturally wants to do. You know, the Euro steps and the side steps and avoiding contact to find angles versus seeking contact out. And then obviously we all know Paolo seeks out contact all the time and, you know, parades to the free throw line, or at least should parade to the free throw line. So how long do you think it takes them to adjust? And during that adjustment process, how much does that, you know, affect their mental or emotional state in terms of, you know, staying engaged and getting back on defense and kind of figure how fast will they figure out life in the playoffs, do you think?
One game max, if not a half, because honestly, I think the past week really helped a lot in that. Obviously, it's still different from, you know, playoffs, but they already saw and dealt a lot with that this past week. So I think by the first half of the first game, they'll know. I'm very optimistic with that. And I could be wrong. I mean, it could take them 3-4 games. I don't know, but that's the fun part of having young guys in this situation for the first time, is you really don't know. But FIBA World Cup action, these last few weeks of the NBA season, I think they're all contributing to them being able to adjust rather quickly. I don't know. You agree, disagree? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately that, I think, determines whether we win or lose the series. So the hope is that they get it real quick. But I think to your point, there's been a helpful kind of shift in the way the games have been called since the All-Star break, which the NBA finally acknowledged, and hopefully that has started the learning curve early.
All right, next question I have, we got to talk about kind of player rotation, like who's in, who's out of the rotation. Do we go 10-man rotation? Do we chop it down to 8 or 9? I think we try to go with a normal bench the first two road games and see how it goes. So, because, you know, from a Cleveland perspective, they actually went 8-man rotation, and they might go with that, you know, 8 or 9 rotation. Because the Cavs, their second to last game of the season where they had to really win, and they did us a favor by beating Indiana in the process. You know, Sam Merrill and Dean Wade were out. They went 8-man rotation with Allen, Mobley, Strus, Mitchell, Garland starting. And then off the bench, they had LeVert, Niang, and Okoro. So there was no Tristan Thompson. There's no Marcus Morris either, who played. We got to worry about Marcus Morris too, potentially. I think if Merrill's back, they'll probably go 9-man rotation. And then with us, assuming J.I. starts, I would go a 10-man rotation. And I would have coming off the bench Mo, Wendell, Joe, Cole, and Fultz. And I want to see how that goes. And you know what? It might be a disastrous first two games, and then you got to adjust by game three at home. But you know, our bench has been an asset for much of the season, and Cleveland doesn't have much of a bench. So you know, it might be one of those where Cleveland might have to wear their starters down, and it might help early on in the series, but in us using our bench, we might end up wearing them down a little bit as the series progresses, but we'll see. I have no clue. Like, if anyone pretends to know, they're just lying, but I think we go 10-man rotation. I think you got a different outlook on this, maybe, Penny.
I first of all, I think keying in on that Cavaliers rotation from that game, I did the same thing. I mean, I'm anticipating them going to that 8-man rotation where you're only getting LeVert, Niang, and Okoro off the bench, which the good news is, I mean, not that we were going to sit Ingles anyway, but all three of those Cavs bench players make Joe Ingles playable. Like, I mean, he can cover all three Niang of those guys at the very least, track the bang, bang Niang around real easy. So that's a net positive. You're not going to have to, watch in horror on the defensive end of the floor for the Ingles minutes in this series, which is great. My controversial take, and I preface this by saying that you'll probably be right, and we probably will stick with a 10-man rotation because, you know, everybody in. But I'm anticipating a 9-man rotation. I'm anticipating Isaac starting, and I think the guy that gets squeezed out is Markelle Fultz, because you can't. I mean, theoretically, you would squeeze Wagner out, but you can't. He's been the spark plug off the bench all year long.
Too good.
And the offensive impact has been too important. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Wagner's minutes go down a little bit, and then you're basically playing the hot hand or who impacts the game more between him and Wendell. But I think Fultz gets squeezed out of the rotation. Maybe you throw him in as a last-ditch effort if Garland or Mitchell gets hot in a way that, you know, shuffling Suggs and Harris or even throwing Isaac on Mitchell for a stretch doesn't do the job. But that's my take. I think Magic go to a nine-man rotation. I think Fultz is kind of the odd man out, or maybe gets some spot minutes here or there. But, you know, Isaac going to the starting lineup is the most important thing. And then that kind of shuffles everything around off of that.
Yeah, look, we haven't seen a lot of it, but I genuinely think Mo and Wendell could be really, really good together because they both can hit threes. They both can get in the paint. And I really think that they can cause a lot of damage to Cleveland's front court if those two are coming off the bench together. But we'll see. We're going to probably see Paolo and Franz be staggered the whole time. Like I expect the entirety of games just about that one of Paolo or Franz is going to be on the court. So, you know, that's the other thing that probably makes my scenario unlikely and yours more likely, but we're going to see. This is a big learning experience for Mosley and the coaching staff as well. I only have one other kind of question or category, and that's just, can our bench and supporting pieces be a big difference like they have been in the regular season? Because look, a big key for us is not letting guys like Strus, Niang, Merrill, and Okoro just torch us on threes. I know Merrill kind of had a neck issue, but I'm assuming he's going to be ready. But if any two of Strus, Niang, Merrill, and Okoro just torches us each game, we're not winning the series. Like, it's not happening because you're dealing with already a tough 4-4 for Cleveland. If you get two of those four kind of ancillary pieces just going off on us from threes or whatever, we're in trouble because I expect Cleveland to shoot and make more threes than us, but can we keep that difference kind of respectable? And I expect Cleveland to live and die by the three, just point blank. They're going to live and die by the three and hopefully they die by it, but they're going to win each of their games by making more threes than us most likely. I don't know if Penny thoughts on any of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're lucky in the way the matchup has played out that it kind of, we can accommodate their size with our size and match that. And then one of the biggest benefits all year has been the Ingles play off the bench and how he, manipulates that second unit. So I think he's in a good position to continue to do in the playoffs what he did in the regular season. But the key to me is that Cole Anthony is going to need, I think, two monster scoring performances where he's pushing 20 points to get us over the hump to win the series. So is he going to be able to come in and be that, you know, really spark plug, microwave six man guy that we desperately need him to be?
Yeah. Cole makes me a little nervous about this series, but hey man, that's the job.
Here's my quick question for you.
And yeah. I'm out of questions. So whatever series questions you got, throw them out.
My answer is going to be probably, too on the nose, but give me your X factor for each team for this series. And I think the matchup, even though it's not a matchup because it's a starter versus a bench guy, but Jalen Suggs to me is the Magic X factor. Is he going to be able to shoot 40% from three in the playoffs the same way he did in the regular season that makes him so invaluable as a two-way guy? And then Isaac Okoro, who ended up shooting 39% from three in the regular season, especially, with no Dean Wade in the first game and whatever. I think the shooting splits for both of those guys will end up telling an important tale as we move along.
Yeah, I think mine is going to be a little bit more higher level. Like my two X factors are Garland and Franz, because if Garland picks up the slack that say like a Mitchell leaves and he like averages like 30 points per game, we're in trouble. And the same thing could be said with Franz. Like Paolo's going to get double and triple teamed. If Franz is averaging, 25 points per game in the series, like we're in business. So, I don't know if you were looking for something more minor roles or what there, Penny, but
No, I think that's good. I mean, I've already written it in stone that Garland is going to go off all season long. So, but I think that's an important note too, is the, you know, basically the second banana on each team. How are they going to step up and kind of support their star? So that'll be one to watch as well, for sure.
Fair enough. All right, Penny, did you have any other questions for the series going in, or should we look at game one here a little
All
bit?
right, let's get into it. Yeah.
All right. It can't be overstated how demoralized that Cavs fan base is going into the series. Like, yeah, they may beat us, obviously, but they have very little confidence of a deep run, if not zero confidence in making a deep run in the playoffs. There's a reason that ticket prices are three or four times cheaper there in Cleveland than they are in Orlando. When you look at games one and two in Cleveland and games three and four, it's literally like three to four times cheaper in Cleveland than they are in Orlando. Max Strus, he said it. He was unhappy with his own team tanking that final regular season game. I'm sure he wasn't the only one that felt that. Could have been Mitchell included, but you know, the other thing to factor in is I know Jamal Mosley and JB Bickerstaff are very close friends. Can Jamal kind of put that aside and take a kill shot here on his friend? Because Bickerstaff, I can't emphasize, is like a dead man walking unless he gets to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, can Mosley be the reason his friend gets a pink slip? Like, it's cruel, but that's something to keep an eye on. And look, this game, it's Saturday at 1 p.m. We're the very first NBA playoff series. One team is going to get off to a better start just based on the early start time alone for this game Saturday. And look, obviously free throws and turnovers, we didn't talk about them, but they're key every game. Like, that's a given. But especially this first game, it feels like that the team that protects the ball best and misses the fewest free throws is likely taking this game. I throw everything else to the side. Like, just it's the fewest mistakes in game one is who's going to win game one. From a free throw perspective, I know the Magic, they haven't been good this season. They're 26th at shooting 75.9% from the charity stripe. Well, the Cavs aren't much better. They're 22nd in free throw percentage. It's 76.5%. That's a 0.6% difference. So it's fairly close. And we have the youth excuse on our side for that matter. But yeah, I don't know, Penny. What are your game one thoughts here? We're not talking prediction here for game
Yeah.
one. We're just
Look,
talking,
we're
we'll give a
just
series prediction, but just game one we're talking here.
fully anticipating the Cavaliers in a, you know, in a rocking building to get out to a hot start. It's no surprise. I mean, a lot of playoff series start that way with the home team going on a huge run to open the game. I would not be surprised at all if the Magic find themselves down 15 points, you know, at a certain point in the first quarter, at the end of the first quarter. But that's how it seems to go in the playoffs. And then there's an equal and opposite run that happens. And this year, more than any, we've seen huge deficits get erased and big comebacks happen. So the biggest key for a team that has not been in this environment before is to, you know, absorb that first punch that's going to come. And I think that the Magic are capable of doing that. And frankly, the last time the Magic were, you know, playing a series in Cleveland, they found themselves down 20 in game one and came back and won that game. So there's a blueprint there, even if it's 15 years old and needs to get dusted off.
There is a blueprint there. Maybe somebody's got some Rashard Lewis in them. I don't know. We'll see. There could be nicknaming somebody cold-blooded by the end of this postseason, but it's possible. It's very possible. Before we get into predicting, you know, people talk about what playoff success for the Magic looks like, and look, I still maintain that everything from here on out is just bonus. We're getting our young guys playoff experience, and we're going to know for certain what we need in the offseason based off of what we see from these playoff games. But if I am nitpicking, and if I do get to pick a little bit here, I don't want to get douchebag swept, because you look at our last three playoff series, Pacers 2012, Raptors 2019, Bucks 2020, all of them were douchebag sweeps where we won game one in all of those series and then didn't win another game in those series. So we have not won two games in a series since the Hawks beat us 4-2 in 2011. So let's change that here. I don't know, Penny, playoff success. We talked a little bit about it
couple podcasts ago, but I don't know if anything changed for you, if you want to nitpick any preference for you.
I mean, I think winning two games surpasses everything that we've done in the other iterations of the team since the Dwight era. So
yes,
I think that's the ultimate playoff success for this year, but I would couch that with a home playoff victory. I think if nothing else, you know, makes it a successful playoff endeavor, and something that the fans get to tangibly hold on to.
Yeah, we do need a home playoff victory. God, yeah, we haven't had one in what, 14 years? 13? So, yeah, 13 years. But, and obviously we have not won a playoff series in the Kia Center. Like, the last time we won a playoff series was in the old arena building. So, you know, that's going on 14 years at the moment. But, all right, Penny, prediction time. I yield the floor to you. Who's winning the series, man?
Well, as you know, I try to be objective. I went into this year with our preseason projections trying to be as objective as possible. There's no way around it. I think the Cavaliers arguably have the best player on either team in Donovan Mitchell. They have the playoff experience with a number of guys up and down their roster, including Max Strus, who went on a tear to get to the finals last year. They have the home court advantage. I was trying to find every which way to give, you know, the Cavaliers the series win. I thought, man, okay, probably five games. It makes more sense. Maybe six games. But the longer that you look at the matchups and how the teams are trending, and the biggest thing I think is the injection of a dominant force in Jonathan Isaac, who's galvanizing the team. And you go, okay, I think the Magic can probably stretch it out to seven games and then probably lose, you know, on the road to a 3-point shooting team at home. But fuck it, we're fans. And I think I'm gonna go Magic in seven on this one, and steal a thrilling victory on the road to get out of the first round.
Wow, Greek Easter Magic in seven prediction. Wow. Oh, wow. Okay. So if you base the series on the Magic being bad when it comes to having 2+ days of rest in games, then it's going to be Cavs in six if you base it off that. I'm saying Magic in six. Give me a 2009 repeat. Give me a Paolo Banchero 40-point closeout game six on our floor to close out the series and win it. I can't go against this kid, man. Like, he's 21. I know it's different scenarios each time here. Like, he showed it at Duke that he could really carry a team big time in do or die situations. He's taken the Magic from 22 to 34 wins and now 34 to 47 wins. He's on a stage now that he might savor this. He might really thoroughly enjoy this series, and he could surprise us and average 32, 35 points per game. Like, I'm not taking that out of the question. You know, or he might struggle because it's the first playoff series. You know, if that's, again, it's a flip of a coin. Like, you have no idea what you're going to get here, but this guy is good. He's freaking just, he's unbelievable. And I think Paolo is going to just drag us to winning in six. I also feel that, look, that Cavs team and that fan base is on the verge of tipping over. And if we just give a strong nudge, we're going to prevail. Like, I just feel it. I could be entirely wrong because, you know, Cleveland sports fans are definitely loyal as shit and stubborn as fuck, but they really have soured on this Cavs team right now. And, you know, Cleveland this season was at its best when it was Mobley and Garland out and hurt, and it was just literally Mitchell and Allen running the show. How intertwined is that core four going to be, especially how the last 6 weeks of the season has gone for them? Like, how really kind of invested and intertwined are they going to be in this? And, you know, let's see which squad handles adversity better. It might be Cleveland because they have the experience and they've done this before, but it might be us because maybe we're too stupid to know any better. I don't know. But, you know, this is the first go around for most of our guys. Like, we only have like four guys on the team with playoff experience. And so, but I'm going Magic with six. Fuck it. You know, it's one of those where, yeah, there's some fandom involved, but logically there are several paths of the Magic winning the series. And yeah, Cleveland could win four games. purely based off 3-point shooting. It's very possible. Like, they get hot and they just blow us out of the water with 3-point shooting. I don't think that's going to happen. So Magic in six. Final thoughts before I close this out, Penny. Any other stuff on your mind going into the playoffs? I mean, we're probably going to be at Wall Street roasting our asses off for game one in that 94 degree heat, but that's okay. We've lived here long enough that we're used to it. But yeah, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Love it. This could very well be the Paolo Banchero introduction to a national audience, kind of in the same way that Trae Young got to have it a couple years ago. So love your prediction. Hope you stay on the path that you've been on this year, close to the pin, and best time of the year. Glad we're in the playoffs again and didn't even have to mess around with the play-in to get here.
Yeah, buddy. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. If you're still listening, we thank you very much for your time. We are the longest running Magic podcast show in existence, so any added support is much appreciated. Subscribing, rating the show highly, positive comments, they all help this podcast ranking immensely. Tweet us any of your questions and feedback. Penny, what's your Twitter handle?
At Spencer Strode.
No C's, just S's, and I'm at Papa Giorgio MBO. And with that, take care. Let's go, Magic.